Hilariously, she also would pretend to be her own manager named Edward, like maintain a different email so that Awkwafina or Nora could say, oh yeah, can you call my manager Edward about that? And then Edward would email back to tell people.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I am the editor of LaineyGossip.com. I'm a talk show host in Canada and also an entertainment reporter. And this is going to really annoy Duana, but my project for this month is introducing smoothies into my life.
I'm Duana Taha. I am a screenwriter and producer, and I am not going to dignify that with a response. This week, we are diving into some name therapy for a celebrity that you might be surprised would need it.
Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. Also, we get into chemistry on set with actors, the work that goes into developing it on camera and off.
It's not just about sex, but it's definitely exciting. We will find out your perfect pairings and tell you some of ours.
This is Show Your Work. All right, so I think that you mentioned something to me over text, me and another friend, and I'm pretty sure other people have the same question. I don't think we've ever talked about Dancing with the Stars on Show Your Work, but...
I assumed that that was part of my contract, was that we would never.
However, Dancing with the Stars did surprise you by involving a person that you are interested in. And many of us were, because the new season.
Right. So actually, that's The Masked Dancer.
Oh, not Dancing with the Stars. Okay, The Masked Dancer. See, I fucked it up.
Right.
Okay, so reality show involving people performing, semi-famous or very famous people performing and being judged. So yes, Elizabeth Smart was revealed to be one of the masked dancers. And I wish people, you could see Duana's face right now, because you were like, I'm sorry, what now? Yes.
Because here's why. If you haven't watched The Masked Dancer or its predecessor, The Masked Singer, the idea is, which I think was all born of, you know, a Ryan Reynolds clip from 2018, right? Having been on, I think, the Korean version. The idea is people perform in masks and they only reveal one person, celebrity, notable per week, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, there's a panel of judges who are trying to guess who it is based on clues that they're acquiring.
I think people know what the concept of the show is, Duana.
Well, the part of the cumulative part was news to me.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying. Okay. And the clue part was news to me. Yeah. So Elizabeth Smart was revealed to be the mom.
So many questions, but listen, like, this could be a whole show. What I want to narrow down and focus on is what you were sharing with our chat group, which is, who is the person in the brainstorm room who was going through a list of possible candidates to compete on The Masked Dancer and was like, what about Elizabeth Smart?
Yeah. And who then had to pitch it to their higher-ups. Because again, this is why I'm emphasizing the clue part. What do most people know about Elizabeth Smart? Like, let me be clear here. The fact that Elizabeth Smart chose to do this, fucking A,
awesome.
May she do whatever the fuck she wants in every possible arena. I'm thinking about the person who said, yeah, you know, and for clues we'll include, oh, well, no, that clue might be weird. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't say. No, I mean, we'll say she's an author and an activist, which she is. I can't imagine that moment.
Me neither. And yet, I think that the reason why this is so interesting and why I wanted to open the show, our first of 2021, like this, it is our first of 2021, right?
Maybe. No, maybe not.
All blending together. Anyway, is because I like the energy of like a big swing like that. If you are the producer, the casting director, to go outside and not to assume, right? Like, I think most of us would be a little reticent in that room if someone brought up, hey, what about putting Elizabeth Smart in a mask, concealing her identity? Think about the history there. And that's
all the implications,
it's icky, right? Or could be. And then giving clues, what would our clue, as you mentioned, and then kind of, you know, still swinging for it and not assuming that Elizabeth Smart would say no.
Well, which that's is, the other amazing part.
Right?
The person who had the balls to approach her people and say, hey, we have this idea. If she, in fact, has people.
If she, in fact, has people, which probably because she's written a book, so you could at least get to her through the publisher, right?
Right. But publishers, you have some experience with publishers. I have some experience with publishers. They're not real super accustomed to receiving requests for their authors to appear on The Masked Dancer.
Anyway, I think that what I liked about it is, you know, oftentimes, and I catch myself doing this, and I catch other people around me doing this, lead with no. No, that's a bad idea. And I will say, and I think you and I can both agree, if you and I were in that room, maybe our first, like, you know, reaction would have been to say no, would have been like, oh, this is uncomfortable. How do we know? And to assume that it would be insulting to somebody like Elizabeth Smart to receive such a request and invitation. And whoever it is that greenlit that and signed off on it and, like, you know, made it possible for the then invitation to be sent out. I mean, that is, to me, that's the energy I want for 2021.
Okay. I really appreciate this reframe. Well done on that, because I did not know that we were going to get here. But yes, for sure, you have to take big swings and not just take big swings hoping that they're going to all hit. You have to take big swings knowing some of them are going to fail. If you wait around to take your big swing until you're sure it's going to be a sure thing, somebody else is going to get there before you.
So with that in mind, be the person who suggested Elizabeth Smart over probably lots and lots of objections and discomfort, and be that person, hopefully, who gets surprised and surprises everybody else when Elizabeth Smart says yes.
And when somebody says, what the hell are you doing? You say, Lainey told me to. I want you to take that energy with you too.
And once again, good on, like, fucking good on Elizabeth Smart, man. Like,
oh my
God. You can do all
May
the things.
May she, whatever the fuck she
experience
wants.
Experience it. Do it.
If she wants to transition into being Dr. Pimple Popper's intern, if she has, like, I don't know, a hairbrush influencer career coming up, whatever, by all means.
All right. So our first main story, a story I pitched to you, and it's because I really, really want to know what you have to say about this person and her name or names.
Mm-hmm.
Awkwafina covers the new issue of Harper's Bazaar. I mean, we all know Awkwafina and the meteoric 3 years or so that she has had, but the piece is about the meteoric 3 years that she has had to have such quick success and to really wrestle with identity, how success informs your identity, changes your identity, maybe I don't know, gives you reason to challenge your own identity. So Awkwafina is also Nora Lum. And there's a significant part of this piece, this interview, in which Nora / Awkwafina talks about the duality of both identities, so to speak. And then, like, you know, I guess debates internally which one to be going forward. And since you are the name therapist, I thought this was really an interesting place to intersect how we make decisions about who we present ourselves to be in our professional lives and when it's time to present ourselves differently.
I mean, yeah, it's so interesting because actually we have seen this play out before, right? If I throw a few stage names at you, you will know to varying degrees the actual legal name of the person, right? Eminem?
Marshall Mathers.
Right. Jay-Z?
Sean Carter.
Right. Retta.
Oh, Retta? I don't know.
Retta is Marietta Sirleaf, and I only know this because I read her book. Who else, maybe?
Missy Elliott, I guess?
Yeah. Is she Melissa? I actually don't know the answer.
Yeah, she's Melissa. Like,
right. And the reason we know this is because sooner or later in lots of people who have appeared on the scene with a pseudonym, with a stage name, with a kind of constructed identity that is not, you know, that is an identity, then they inevitably say, oh, but also I am this other thing. And all often to kind of prove that they are this other thing, they do that other thing under their own name, right? Like to distinguish between them. I couldn't swear to this, but if we talk about the person currently known as Puffy, what is he these days?
I think he's still Diddy. Or is he Puffy?
Remember that he was doing some acting for a while, right? And I believe he was credited in his film projects as Sean Combs, right? So, like, P. Diddy is having all white parties on a yacht, but Sean Combs is acting in movies.
Yeah.
Right. So this kind of thing of, like, I have to navigate my identity or marry my two names together isn't that new. What is new is the debating about it in real time, as in this article. Right.
The last time we sort of touched around something like this was Lady Gaga and Stephanie Germanotta for
Great Example.
A Star is Born. Because initially, when the project was announced in the press release, they said, you know, cast in the role of Ali is Stephanie Germanotta. By the time they filmed the movie and marketed it, it was Lady Gaga all the way. And in fact, like when she won her Oscar for Best Original Song, and all like in the nominations and whatnot, they, you know, nominated her as Lady Gaga and not Stephanie Germanotta. So we talked about that, I remember. And there wasn't a public discussion though. Lady Gaga wasn't, there was no interview where she talked about it. I think it was like one statement or maybe they didn't even address it. It was, point is, it was never put out there for like consumption. Whereas Awkwafina / Nora is actively kind of, again, I keep using the word wrestling, and I'm not sure if it's that severe wrestling, but it is basically like 65% of this interview to the point where Lulu Wang, her director in The Farewell, weighs in and still all this, you know, it's been a year and a half since they wrapped on the film, maybe 2 years, still believes, in her words, philosophically, that they should have credited Awkwafina in the film as Nora Lum and not as Awkwafina.
Right. And that's a really interesting anecdote because that is the intersection of art and commerce, right? It's Awkwafina is a personality and a voice and a, you know, a bit that we all can kind of recognize at a glance, right? And Nora Lum, by, like, I'm taking the words out of your mouth, which you took from Lulu Wong's mouth, is, you know, the thoughtful, nuanced, arguably nominatable performance in The Farewell. And the idea is that they can't live together. That's what the idea is here. And that's sort of the thesis of the piece. And, you know, if I may, we often talk about really beautifully written profiles. And I don't think this one isn't beautifully written, but towards the beginning of the piece, there's a long extended metaphor about how the name Awkwafina changes like slime that they're making, that Awkwafina / Nora and the writer are making. And I don't think it works, because I don't believe that anywhere in this piece is the evidence of, oh, I'm really struggling, says Awkwafina, to be all the things that I want to be now that I have all these opportunities. In fact, I would argue that she kind of always had the duality of these two identities worked out. And the idea that they should blend is kind of what the question is that's being raised. But I don't actually believe that that's what she herself is wrestling with. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I mean, and what's interesting is that everybody's going to have a certain read and interpretation, right, of what she, where, how she really feels about it, which, again, is the big question mark. I read it to mean that I think eventually she wants to edge over to using Nora Lum in her acting work, but there's fear there, you know, in terms of name recognition. And, you know, more people know the name Nora. I mean, more people know the name Awkwafina than they do Nora Lum. Now, that was my feeling. And clearly yours wasn't.
I think my feeling was that I don't get the impression, or maybe I'm wrong. You know, she talks at one point about saying, it's not my time yet to say it's Nora now. I think what I'm getting at is it seems here like names are standing in for phases of a career. Does that make sense? Yeah. If we tie Awkwafina to the early stuff, the joking stuff, there's a quote here, Awkwafina is still someone that comes without all the layers of anxiety. She's more confident than Nora. Nora does hide behind her still, and I don't see how Nora exists in Awkwafina's world yet. I don't see how I could have done this without Awkwafina. It's that persona thing. And we've heard this a lot from performers before, right? You hear about, oh, so-and-so is actually very shy. They're actually very retiring. But when they put on that suit, that makeup, I don't know if the members of KISS talk about how shy they are, but like you get the idea. That there is, you know, I can do this because I'm wearing a suit, essentially. I think maybe what is bothering me about the kind of duality that's being set up here, and look, I can't argue with if Nora Lum wants to only be Nora Lum, it's not my business, but it seems as though there's an inference here that Awkwafina has to go away, has to die, pardon the expression, so that Nora can live. And if she feels that way, then fair enough, but it doesn't seem that way to me. I'm quite compelled by her ability to be both, to have both those identities.
That's exactly what I was looking for in name therapy. Not that Nora or Awkwafina, not that they're coming to you for name therapy, but
yes, thank you very much.
This is what was interesting to me, because I was asking myself, you know, should, at that point I was like career analyzing or trying to career consult for Awkwafina / Nora. And I just didn't know. I didn't know what the answer was. Should she at some point drop Awkwafina? Should she just, you know, it's Awkwafina, it's Awkwafina. So what? And you just crystallized it for me. Why not?
Why not like be both? Why not have both at your disposal? there is somebody on the tip of my tongue who goes back and forth between two, and I can't quite remember. There are shades of it. You know, when Beyonce has people call her Mrs. Carter, or you pointed out Lady Gaga and Stephanie Germanotta. There are others. But to me, it's sort of, I don't know why this can't be an achievement in and of itself for her to do both and be both. You know, there's an interesting quote here, an interesting kind of clip from a paragraph, and I have to read it and you'll understand why. It reads, "Lum was, in her estimation, quote, a bad kid," unquote. "She regularly skipped class to drink or smoke weed or cigarettes. She always got caught. She was diagnosed with ADD and depression. She had a C-minus average and barely graduated from high school. Quote, I was the class clown that would do things no one would ever do," unquote, she says. Yes, she went to LaGuardia, the fame school. Quote, "I would raise my hand and say stupid things, like the equivalent of fuck her right in the puss," unquote. So here's the thing. We have in there LaGuardia, the fame school, and class clown, and ADD and C-minus average. And is any of that surprising to you from the perspective of the Awkwafina persona?
No.
Right. But all of those things were who Nora Lum was.
Yeah.
Right? There wasn't really an Awkwafina yet, or Awkwafina was just being born.
Right.
And so it almost seems as though Nora of today is judging Nora of high school for having been those things. Right?
Yeah.
A bad kid. Like that's again, it's a tiny quote, possibly pulled out of context. But in terms of that description, I go, I don't know if it's that bad. And it got you to where you are. So it does seem to me that it's hard to refer to her as Nora because she seems to have Nora up on a shelf. I'm just going to say this the way I would say it if we weren't on the air. It seems to me like Awkwafina has this image of who she thinks Nora Lum is supposed to be and this level of achievement and goodness and like, I don't know, clarity. And even the photos in this piece are all kind of lending themselves to that. And she feels like she can't be that yet. She can't be that perfect. And so being Awkwafina is more comfortable because she's allowed to be a fuck up. And that's all layman's terms, but that's the real feeling that I'm getting coming off this.
Do you think that, because I don't think that we've written, like, as much as I would love you to provide name therapy to Awkwafina, I don't think that any decision has been made at this piece. So what I'm asking you now is, given what you've just said, do you think that at some point we're no longer going to go by Awkwafina and it's going to be Nora Lum?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
If I'm right, if I'm in overstretching my bounds way far here, if she has an image of Nora Lum as supposed to be more perfect or good or at the top of her game, and Awkwafina as not being that, do you feel like a grown-up at this point in your life?
Oftentimes, no.
Right. And do you sometimes still think like someday I'll get my shit together on this level or that level, or one of these days I'm going to learn to do whatever?
Yes.
Right. I feel as though there's something about the way this is written that says, you know, she's waiting for that one of these days. One of these days I will inhabit Nora Lum fully. One of these days I will become that person. And as we all know, like waiting around for one of these days, waiting around for when I'm a grown-up kind of never comes, right?
It's essentially what she says when she has that quote about success. Like, like the time when you're waiting for your big break is actually the best time ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And she talks later about, you know, is this the pinnacle of all those years of waiting? Like, is this the peak or is this on the way to the peak? Kind of to paraphrase it. So I don't know. It seems as though she's using Awkwafina as the catch-all for I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't think that we need to let that person go because certainly that's who resonated with us. It's not about fart jokes, as she says at the end of the piece. It's about somebody who is imperfect but worthy anyway.
I do think that there's a little bit of a binary, though, that's set up here, you know, especially when you consider including Lulu Wang's quote, where clearly Lulu was not being oblique about her opinion that not only, I mean, I listen, for the purposes of the farewell, it is 100% clear that Lulu wanted Awkwafina to go by Nora Lum. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And the binary that I'm talking about is, you know, business and art.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I do think that there are other people who weigh in on these decisions, you know, whether or not Awkwafina considers them is another thing. But where we talk about work and celebrity, you're talking about an entire team. There's an agent, there's a manager, there's a publicist. All of them have an opinion and you know they will share it. No. We got to go with Awkwafina. We have to put Awkwafina's name on this movie. Like Lulu basically told us that that was behind the decision making. And the artist within Lulu and the humanist, if you will, was like, it still seems pretty bitter about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think it is probably, I think you hit on something really interesting there because I think it's probably a whole lot easier to put stuff on Awkwafina because look, it's a stage name in a way that is clearly meant to be knowing and a wink to the audience, right? Awkwafina is nobody's name. It's not like Marilyn Monroe renaming herself from Norma Jean. It's almost something and someone over there. Mm-hmm. If you're walking around doing things as an artist with your own name on them, then you can say, I don't do this, I do that, I don't think that is for me. But I can see where if you're overwhelmed with success, if you suddenly have a team, which you never thought you would, where somebody can say, okay, Nora, I get it's not for you, but it could be for Awkwafina, right? Isn't she like a little bit kind of different, kind of out there? Like, it's okay, you can still be Nora, but Awkwafina can just do this thing for us, can't she? And making that person kind of an external suit.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Man, if you will, allows for that distinction to kind of worm in there. So maybe the move towards Nora Lum is to stop letting that wedge mm-hmm. get in, you know?
But as of right now, your prediction is that we'll know Awkwafina as Awkwafina.
For now, I'm trying to think of somebody who has completely shrugged off their name. I can't think of one. What's their person, initial name?
Was the person that you were thinking of The Weeknd and Abel Tesfaye?
It wasn't, but that's a great one.
Right.
Because it's another name where The Weeknd is nobody's mother looks at them when they're swaddled in a blanket and goes, I shall call you The Weeknd.
Right.
Like it's clearly a self-chosen put on name. You know, what's so interesting though, is there was another lesser headline this week. And she must've chosen a slow news week. But you saw the Anne Hathaway news,
yes.
Right?
Anne Annie?
Anne Hathaway saying, don't call me Anne. I hate it. Mm-hmm. Call me Annie. Call me Path, whatever. And I will be the first to say that I always thought all the like people coming out of production with her going, oh, Annie was like this or Annie was like that were, you know, just implying, look how close we are. The same way people talk about Bobby De Niro.
Right.
Right.
Right. right.
But she clearly is serious about, like, she hates her name. She says, call me Annie, which is hard because unlike Awkwafina and Nora, it implies greater intimacy. I think she will have less success, put it that way.
Anne Hathaway?
I think Anne Hathaway is going to continue to be called Anne Hathaway unless she bills herself as Annie Hathaway going forward.
Well, my question about that was, like, you know, she said it in an interview where, you know, I prefer to be called Annie. By whom? Everyone? Like,
that was the implication that I got. Yeah.
You know, if I ever interview her again, I'm going to be like, hey, what's up, Annie? Because already that makes me feel uncomfortable.
Right. But it's funny that it makes you feel uncomfortable when you live this yourself. You are one of the only people I know whose nickname is actually more for public consumption. And a sign of intimacy with you is that people actually use your full name.
Yes. In all caps, usually when you're trying to tell me something. Elaine.
Right, but not just me.
No, not
just
you.
Let's be clear here. It's you go by Lainey professionally. That's what you do. But when you are meeting people, real people in your real life, you say, hey, it's Elaine. Or, hi, I'm Elaine. I've seen you do it 1,000 times.
Right.
What does it mean to you when somebody refers to you as Lainey versus Elaine?
Oh, Duanna, are we having name therapy right now?
Sure are. You walked right into it.
There are a couple of reflexes. One of those reflexes is if someone that isn't in my everyday day-to-day life who calls me Elaine, immediately I'm like, where do I know you from? What in my past? High school, university? Mm-hmm. That is like the immediate thing where then I'm racking my brain. Like, you know, did we fuck? You know, right. Were we at a party? Whatever. So that's number one. Like there's a...
Because they're from your pre-Lainey life.
Yeah.
Yes?
Segmentation. Right? Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Am I doing the therapy?
We're getting there for sure.
And I don't know. What was the question again?
How do you feel when somebody addresses you as Elaine versus Lainey?
And then if they aren't people from university or pre-Lainey gossip, then, and they call me Elaine and it's the first time, then I'm kind of like, why are you calling me Elaine?
Well, but you introduce yourself that way. If somebody who has met you in a Lainey context suddenly calls you Elaine,
yes.
Do you feel like that's because of a sign of intimacy, or have you invited them to do so, or what's that look like?
Well, as I've said, I don't generally, I have stranger danger. So I very rarely introduce myself anyway.
Well, but you work with hundreds of people at a time.
Yeah.
Like that's television. That's how it goes.
And in those cases, yeah, I am. Hi, I'm Lainey.
Mm-hmm.
And then in non-working times, like I'll be with Yasik and he'll be like, this is my wife, Elaine.
Yeah. Right.
So if someone who's like used to call me Lainey ends up calling me Elaine, it's a little jarring.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay. Well, I'm not going back, just so you know. Like, there's no world.
You don't get to call me Lainey anymore.
I don't wish to, because that's like a public person. That's
right.
Somebody else.
But I think that, like, for Anne Hathaway, it's a little bit, you know, the media celebrity relationship. I have read this article having done my homework. Let's say I'm about to interview her. I have read that you prefer to be called Annie, but yet I'm still scared calling her Annie because, as we know, celebrities can turn on a dime and be moody. And it's like, I don't want to be that person who gets thrown out of the room for calling Anne Hathaway Annie.
But it also could be a great endpoint, right? Of here's a point of intimacy. You know, if I call you Annie right away, it feels like we're on such a first name basis. And she might say, yeah. Whereas to go circle back to Awkwafina, because it's how I think there is an intimacy in knowing somebody by their nickname. I think we all acknowledged as soon as Awkwafina came on the scene, hey, we're all kind of in on it with her nickname. And I would never call her Nora unless I was expressly invited to do so.
Yeah. And yet, I would say less so with Awkwafina, but like when we talk about like a Lady Gaga or The Weeknd, it's weird.
Oh, it's for sure. Right? It's weird.
Like how it doesn't fall out of your mouth. It doesn't, you know, and there are times when conversationally we say each other's names. I'll be like, no, Duana, it's like this. And you'll be like, no, Elaine, it's like that. What am I going to do? No, The Weeknd, it's like this. It's fucking weird. Awkwafina's like,
I mean,
way, like Awkwafina's a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Or I don't know, maybe you call him Weak. I have no idea. or that's why people just resort to dude, right? Or things like that. This is the situation for which dude and bro and all those sort of like affectionate honorifics were created. I was working with somebody once who shared the same name as my husband, and I couldn't get around it to speak to him like using his name because there was too many crossovers and similarities. And I wound up calling him bro almost exclusively, even when he wasn't around, like to the point of where is bro, which I think he came to like. But you know, our relationships it's about intimacy and what liberties you want to take or not take.
Okay, so does Drake introduce himself as Drake or Aubrey?
I think it depends on the context. I have not met him in recent history, but he's like Drake is his middle name, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know, calling yourself, I don't know what, salt of salt and pepper. So I feel like in certain situations, yeah, he would say, hi, I'm Drake. If he's meeting his mother's friends, obviously I think he's going to say, hi, I'm Aubrey. But I feel like he's never been as anxious to, or just maybe never as able to, like, keep those two identities separate, right? Like with The Weeknd, for a while, wasn't his identity kind of a secret?
His face was a secret for most of the year.
Right.
So,
Sia,
yes.
Which is a whole other story.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's about, it's about what you give people permission to do. And maybe that's the overall thesis here. It sounds as though perhaps Awkwafina Nora feels like maybe she gave people too much permission in too many parts of her identity. I think it's not an accident that her show on Comedy Central was called Awkwafina is Nora from Queens.
Right.
That's the official name of it, right? And she talks about how, you know, when everything in my life was amazing, why did I feel like I had no sense of identity? Why do I feel like nobody knows me anymore? And that's not exclusive to her. I think a lot of people with new fame mm-hmm. can feel that way. But I think it's exacerbated by this issue of living inside the Awkwafina suit, as opposed to the Nora person that you actually feel is yourself.
You know, the added layer of interesting to Awkwafina / Nora's story in terms of names is, of course, she is East Asian. She's Chinese mm-hmm. on her father's side, Korean on her mother's side. Mm-hmm. And for those of us who are from East Asian backgrounds, typically the first name we are given is from our, like, you know, cultural language. So, for example, my Chinese name is Lu Yuk Fun. I'll say it with a Cantonese accent, Lu Yuk Fun. Lu is my family name. We've talked about this a little before. Last year, I remember we talked about it with the cast of Parasite. And we talked about Choi Woo-shik and the fact that they never – and in my experience, like lately, at least modern history, modern celebrity – Korean celebrities have, like, especially those who are based out of South Korea and are, like, you know, opening up internationally, have stayed with their Korean name as their only name. You know, if, let's say for...
You mean they don't acquire an English name?
Sure. Cho Woo-shik, for example, who is one of the cast members of Parasite, played the son. Park So-dam played the daughter. You know, Choi is his family name. He didn't, like, he didn't go with Andrew Choi Woo-shik. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
it's
I got you.
But for a lot of other, like, previous generations, especially in my culture, which I'm most familiar with, Chinese culture, we added an English name to it.
Right. And there are still people who, you know, I spoke to people in the past few years who still believe that that is almost essential for East Asian people who are going to study or work or travel in the West.
That's right.
I kind of don't agree, but it's also not totally for me to say. But I kind of don't agree. So I'm into Choi Woo-shik not acquiring, like, What does it do for us to have Matthew tossed in there? Nothing. That doesn't mean anything or tell us anything about him.
Totally.
Right?
Exactly. In Awkwafina's case, she was born in America. There's like a different set of – same with me. I was born in Canada. So my parents, her parents in that time decided we would have Chinese names and then we would have an English name. But the added layer that I was talking about is – that then she went and gave herself another name, which is like not a Nora or a Beth or a Sarah or an Emily or a Catherine or a Jane. It was a completely made up name. Like she is the only Awkwafina, which I think is super interesting on that level as well. That professionally she discarded the, I don't know, the immigrant way, which was Nora Lum, the immigrant name, or at least the name that her immigrant parents gave their American child and went even a, like, and didn't go back to the cultural name, but even went beyond that and went with like a much more aggressively modern, like, identity.
Yeah. Except I don't think she ever expected it to be an identity, right? She was doing stuff under the name Awkwafina, one assumes, partly so that Nora had plausible deniability.
But that's the happy accident.
Yep. Hilariously, she also would pretend to be her own manager named Edward, like maintain a different email so that Awkwafina or Nora could say, oh yeah, can you call my manager Edward about that? And then Edward would email back to tell people. I mean, look, this is the thing. Names continue to evolve and change and do what you need from them. And yeah, I think we should think of them as wardrobes to a certain extent to be used when we need them and modified or MacGyvered as your needs change. But I kind of think it's great that maybe one name does not encompass everything that one person wants to be. So I sent you this article because, as with most of the articles I send you, I felt like it was the kind of thing I scream down the phone at you, but somebody had actually gone ahead and typed it up. And I do that quite often. Ask me about the one I sent Kathleen today. But this is an article from The Hollywood Reporter about casting directors from Never Have I Ever, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, P-Valley, and more, talking about curating chemistry between co-stars. And I feel like this is super important because there are so many shows, you know, when shows get on the air for a week or 2 weeks and then immediately get canceled.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes if there are shows where the show maybe needs work, it's kind of bad, it's not working, but there's something happening, there's some chemistry sizzling, it all kind of knocks through the roof and you're like, yeah, no, I just want to keep watching those people together no matter what they're doing.
Yep.
Famously, that was Friends, right?
Yep.
Was the chemistry was so good. So I wanted to get your take on this piece and on some of the examples that they cited.
Okay.
Never Have I Ever is the big one, right?
Yep.
They talk about how the whole series had to revolve around the Davey character.
Yeah.
And of course, we are contractually obligated as Canadians to say that Maitreyi Ramakrishnan is from Toronto, from suburban Toronto, and she got the role. And then they can build around her a family that really feels real,
right?
A mother and a sister who you believe would play off her. And also that, you know, a never before been on TV actor can vibe mm-hmm. with. So I think that one's a gimme in terms of you can't have Never Have I Ever without Davey.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
What did you think about the boys when they were writing about the chemistry with the boys, with the big crush on Paxton Hall Yoshida versus her classmate Ben Gross?
All right. So my thought process was in combination with the word, the use of the word curate in the title, curating chemistry. Mm-hmm. When I was reading that and I was trying to understand how they actively work on that chemistry, it reminded mm-hmm. me of all the conversations that you and I have had about writing in general, where mm-hmm. it's been romanticized that just flows out. Inspiration just comes. And that
right.
you don't like sit there and like grind it out, because that's mm-hmm. not romantic. And so when we talk about chemistry between actors on set and in a story and on a show, oftentimes it has been romanticized. They were cast and they did like, a screen test together. And immediately we thought that there was magic. And there's been legends and legends, right? Legendary stories about auditions and screen tests, and this kind of spark happens. And they don't get into what I think was so interesting to me in this, which was like how many people are involved in other, like developing that chemistry. It's more than just two people. I don't know if that was the answer you were looking for, Duana, but that is where my mind was.
No, I mean, it's absolutely more than those two people. And I think it's people fighting for those people, right? It's fighting for those situations. I will say this. I will say that thing of, oh, we got those two people on screen and there was such chemistry, is I have seen that happen in what seem like incidental scenes that they just crackle, which is another kind of like industry like mm-hmm. Term that seems like it's a bit cheesy. Oh, it crackled. But you can see it happening. Like everybody in the room is suddenly riveted, even if these two characters are just talking about, I don't know, dropping off a package, right? And you want to see more of that. But then it's about having to fight for that, having to engineer those situations into place. So either writing more scenes for those people, as in Never Have I Ever, they talked about how Davey had so much chemistry with Ben that they wound up writing more of those scenes, or about making maybe the unpopular casting choice. You know, to me, the kind of gold standard story for that one is Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze in Dirty Dancing, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, famously, they hated each other. They couldn't get along. They had a terrible time on the last project they were on. But they have chemistry anyway, right?
Yeah.
And that almost improbable part is what makes the whole movie work. Like, you're going, why is he wasting his time with this kid? And why is she, like, sure, she's chasing around this hot guy, but there are other hot guys who won't treat her like shit. But it's because of that chemistry and not just, like, sexual bed chemistry.
Yeah.
But, like, you want to see them on screen together, right?
Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams, that was another famous story, too. I mean, I think that their screen test together is on YouTube. Like, I'm pretty sure lots of people have seen it. But very famously, they hated each other.
Right.
And they've talked about it. But that team realized that whatever, like, they might hate each other, but they still crackle.
There's something electric happening here. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because the other thing I always think about with The Notebook is James Marsden, who is like, he's so likable. Mm-hmm. He's so perfectly affable. In that movie, in Westworld is what's coming to mind, in probably 98,000 different rom-coms. But maybe because he's so likable, you never like, oh my God, he's burning up the screen with chemistry, right? It's not, so he's never become somebody where you're like, oh, I need to see him with somebody or with so-and-so. So that's what's kind of interesting to me, is the times when it's like, it should be great. Everybody should like this person, but nobody cares, right? Or chemistry can do things that that you don't like. For example, I love, as hard as it is to watch Get Out over and over again, there are two key elements of chemistry in that movie to me. Number one, Daniel Kaluuya has some chemistry with Allison Williams.
Yes.
They have like a rat-a-tat back and forth together, right? Which you buy. He also has really good chemistry with Lil Rel, which allows you to like almost have a comfort in those scenes. Like, you almost relax into what you know is going to be a terrifying, tense movie because of the chemistry in those scenes that allows you to kind of chill out and relax there, right?
I agree. I also think like it applies to more than just acting. You know, I have been... like, I have participated in auditions myself, not necessarily for scripted programming, but for non-scripted programming. And there is definitely a chemistry test to test out hosts, for example. And so for sure, there's a crackle in certain moments. But you risk, to your point in all this, I think, you risk the crackle dissipating if the community and the team don't do the work to really give you like the garden or the room to keep the crackle going. And that means producers, that's writers, that's, it's all of that. It means that everybody else has to manufacture a set of conditions where the crackle can occur.
Right. And to get behind it, even if it doesn't add up to that. I'm going to do something that you should never, ever do ever. And that is, give an example from something I haven't seen, but stay with me. One of the examples that they cite in this piece is Perry Mason, the new HBO remake. So it stars Matthew Reese, and they say, once you have Matthew Reese, you want to make sure whoever's opposite isn't wiped off the screen. Oftentimes you have to stay on your leading guy because the other actors can't hold their own. And A, I've seen that happen. And B, I'm obsessed with Matthew Reese and famously had so much chemistry with Keri Russell on The Americans that they actually went ahead and got married for all intents and purposes. But what's interesting to me is then they cast Tatiana Maslany. Mm-hmm. And she plays a nun in that show. And I haven't seen the show, but to me, you would be inclined to go, well, cast her as the love interest, like have them be in a situation where they can generate some stuff here. But it takes a bolder choice to go, no, actually, let's have her over here as this character. The energy that we get out of it, even if it's not just sexual, is will be allowed to come through nonetheless, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that we always need to be aware of too. When we're talking about, diverse casting or casting that is LGBT inclusive, you also have to go, I'm not just trying to find, say, one trans person who is a good actor to play this role. I also have to find several people to play off that person with whom there is actual chemistry. Otherwise, they're going to stand there and not do much and just be a figurehead. Cough, cough, Orange is the New Black. So I think that there is something to be said for, to your point, not only how many people are involved, but how deep it goes to protect the chemistry. Because if you do, then amazing things happen. But there's so many ways to knock it out, to not have it happen. Does that make sense? Yeah. What's your favorite casting or odd combination, or who do you love watching, even though it shouldn't make sense?
Scripted?
Sure. Well, either, but sure. That's the avenue that we're in.
Who do I love? Well, okay. I know you're going to gloat a little bit here, but on paper, I can't imagine that Matthew Rhys and Kerry Russell were crackly to anybody. Obviously, anybody who's watched The Americans is going to be like, are you crazy? This is what chemistry is.
But right. It's going through the roof.
Initially, I think that was something like unexpected.
Sure. And I would argue that I'm sure there were bigger names than either of them who could have been cast in those roles, right? Yeah. But you go for the who or, oh yeah, her, because there's so much energy there and trust people to find it on their own, which again goes back to our earlier conversation about name versus energy behind the name.
But it's an energy for, in her case too, it's an energy that really up to that point in her career, we didn't associate all the energy that she brought to that character, like how dark and complicated and generally not like Felicity, literally and characteristically.
Funny that you bring that up. Funny you bring it up because you are not in the Felicity rewatch that is casually happening between several of our friends and on Twitter. But the overall consensus is that is the show overall, but especially the cast, is better than they needed to be. There are signs now in Kerry Russell. If you look back at Felicity, where you're like, oh, I can see little sparks here and there.
Okay.
Famously, Jennifer Garner happened because of essentially a one-off throwaway role that J.J. Abrams really liked. And developed Alias more or less for her. So you can see bits of it. But yes, I hear you. It was not typecasting. Mm-mm. It wasn't casting, I don't know, who's that one I can't bear? Rooney Mara, like as a spy, right? Where you're like, sure.
That would be the obvious. But then, so it's not only the chemistry, it's the chemistry having switched what you expect like in the past from this actor. So that for me is the one. How about you?
Let's see.
That show 100% was all chemistry between. It doesn't work if the Jennings aren't the Jennings.
It doesn't work at all if you're just watching. Otherwise, you're watching two people argue their way through a marriage and a series of horrible situations for weeks on end.
Yeah.
I think I would say, you know what I would say? I would argue that, the biggest chemistry win is the inclusion of the Janet character, Darcy Carden, in The Good Place. The Good Place had some real strong cast, to begin with, In terms of Ted Danson, Kristen Bell, those two have great chemistry. Anytime Kristen Bell is not required to be like a lovely princess, she's better. But the Janet character, who essentially starts off as a Siri, became a real check and balance, kind of like sober second thought, but also kind of snarky, but also whatever, that rounded out several of the characters and made them more interesting to watch when, to be honest, they had started the show essentially as caricatures. And I feel like she was the show's secret weapon. She had chemistry with Ted Danson to begin with, but added to certain scenes, had a long storyline with Manny Jacinto, did very well with Kristen Bell and so forth. She added and elevated and gave dimension to what otherwise were kind of cartoon characters. So that's a good one for me.
So The Americans, The Good Place, we've brought up, like, we've kind of done a tour of shows. Felicity, The Notebook. I will say that I just finished this weekend, and for those of you who haven't seen it, Regina King's One Night in Miami, when we're talking about chemistry and casting, because not only are you casting four actors who are playing titans, I mean, we're talking about Muhammad Ali at the time, Cassius Clay, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown, but we're talking about a film that was based on a play, so most of it is set essentially in a hotel suite. So when you talk chemistry, it's not only how the four of those interact, but we've all been like out for dinner with four or five friends. And sometimes two people break off in a side conversation and three people have a conversation when one person goes to the bathroom. And this film has all of those combinations, right? Two and two, one and three, three, like one, two, and four. And so the chemistry, like the casting for this is like, it's wild. So watch this with, I would like watch that film with this article in mind and think about the delicate dance that's happening on so many different levels and the work that had to happen. You know, Regina King as the director, probably like set designing it to feel like a space for these actors to really like inhabit their characters. All of that was unreal. So it was a symphony. So let us know also what you think and what your examples of great chemistry and unexpected chemistry you always come back to.
Absolutely. And I would say the weirder, the better. This piece includes an anecdote about Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, about Jane Levy and Lauren Graham and Skylar Astin and Mary Steenburgen. But I'm like, no, those are just beloved people. Everybody loves all those people in everything. The counterpoint being the weirder, the better. I just started watching The Flight Attendant.
Oh, and Kaylee Cuoco, that one?
Kaylee Cuoco, yeah. Rosie Perez, and Zasha Mamet. Not a combination I ever thought I would see, but I cannot hang up on you quick enough so that I can get up to another episode.
Yeah, I've heard people like it's a perfect for right now. It's like a good binge.
Let us know your thoughts and what we need to catch up on chemistry-wise.
While you go do that and enjoy the scripted, I will go back to enjoying Bling Empire, where there is no chemistry sometimes, and that's the point. Thank you, though, for listening and for supporting our show. Don't forget, share your chemistry highlights with us. Any other work anecdotes? Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
And we will be back next time with more dig deeps into the work that you may have not even known was happening, but that you're happy that did.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.